And with that, we bring in Seth Grossman, Liberty and Prosperity. He always has something very interesting and informative to say, and I'm sure today is no exception. Seth, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. And again, I invite everybody to visit libertyandprosperity.com. We have a new post on the anti-Israel protest yesterday in Atlantic City with about 400 or 500 Muslims parading, and not just for justice in Palestine, but the sign said destroy Israel. And you really can't appreciate the impact of that power unless you look at the photos. And the photos were posted by the Press of Atlantic City in their online edition. They didn't do an article telling you what the speaker said, so all you can see are the photos of what the sign said. And we have a whole lot of details on that. But before I talk about that, the point is, with electric cars, the energy has to come from somewhere. So isn't it ironic that when Governor Murphy and Biden are saying we need to all have electric cars, so when you come back from the day of commuting, you plug your car in and expect power to be there. And at the same time, they blew up the power plant at Beasley's Point, the last of it, the smokestack. So where's the power supposed to come from? Supposed to come from the wind? Well, what if the wind's not blowing? What from the sun? Well, we have this thing called night. So where's the power going to come from? There's no talk of building any new nuclear power. So it's all about making us poor and dependent and to have control over us. So it is a concern. And what's an interesting concern is, notice how they always say, well, we're going to get rid of the electric of gasoline cars in 2035. So nobody thinks it's going to happen, or it's not going to happen to them, or they'll figure out some way around it. They always do this little by little. And it reminds me a little bit of what they did, the environmentalists and the government did with beach houses. I don't know about you, but I'm was shocked, you know, as a lawyer, when I had a client they wanted to buy their mom's house in Margate, small modest house in Margate, and of course the mom lived there for years. The kitchen was old, the bathroom was old, the windows were old. So what they wanted to do is fix up the house so they could end up retiring and living there. First thing they find out, you can't fix up your house unless you raise it, spend $75,000 to raise the house off the ground. Well, who says you have to do that? Well, that's the building codes we have now. And when did all that start? Well, nobody voted for it. You had no choice. The federal government said, well, we're not going to give flood insurance to anyone in the community unless you adopt these rules that say you have to do that. And why would you want to raise a house to have a second floor? When you're older, you don't want to walk up a set of steps. You don't want the cost of the maintenance of an elevator up and down. But this is how they force you to do stuff that makes no sense whatsoever. They say, how's it going to save on flood insurance? Because back in the old days, you had a small, modest house. If, God forbid, there was a storm every 20 or 30 years, you'd put another one up. Now you have to invest all this money for elevators and second stories, and you don't have the same quality of life you had before. And that's exactly what they're doing with the cars. I had a friend who wanted to install a natural gas grill in her backyard. Found out that would cost like $3,000-$4,000. Why? Because the government puts all these new restrictions on expanding natural gas pipes. And it's like nobody wants it. It's we're being forced to do stuff that makes no sense to pursue this agenda, that is being put out there by these woke people just to increase their own power and control over us.
Well, that's exactly what I was trying to say, but you said it a little better than I did.
So anyway, let's talk about that rally in Atlantic City, because it was absolutely frightening. Most of the people, I'd say 95% of the people at that rally, were they were Muslims, but they were mostly immigrants from Pakistan and Bangladesh. And anyone who has lived here during the past 30 or 40 years has noticed this huge change between that community and what it was 30 or 40 years ago. Because we all know that many of our friends who are taxi drivers, who owned stores on the boardwalk, very congenial people, loved America. And now suddenly, 30, 40 years later, you know, these demonstrations against Israel, you see what they're preaching in the mosques against Christians, against America. What happened? And what happened is, you know, many of these people were not very religious when they came here, but they were Muslim and they wanted to set up a mosque, and they would do the best they could. They'd get a local person who was familiar with the Quran. They'd have a storefront. They'd pray, you know, every day or once a week, and they'd be just fitting into the American way of life. What happened about 30 or 40 years ago is that suddenly you had these, I guess, I don't know what you'd call them, from Saudi Arabia and from India, from Pakistan, people with all this money saying, it's a shame you have a mosque in a storefront. We'll give you money to build a brand new mosque. And they're going to say, well, we don't have $200,000 to build a mosque. Don't worry. We'll pay for your beautiful new mosque. And then they'll say, and you can't just have a part-time preacher running your services. You need a full-time imam. And they would say, well, we can't afford an imam. Don't worry. Saudi Arabia is going to pay for your imam. So suddenly you're getting these lavish new mosques all over New Jersey. You're getting these preachers who are trained by the Wahhabi school of Saudi Arabia and what's called the Deoband school in India, who trained the Taliban, the most radical, extreme form of Islam, and that's what's being taught on a regular basis to their children. And if you look at the photos, you could see the change in the power that they have, and it's scary.
You know, I just can't see how people are in favor of Hamas. They are terrorists. That's all they are, plain and simple.
Well, from their point of view, the speaker is an interesting guy. His name is Jawad Rasool. He was the main speaker at the rally yesterday, and he used to be the imam that was sent to preach there several years ago. But now he's at a really big mosque in Islamic Center in Austin, Texas. So it's interesting how, and by the way, his biography says he's from Augusta, Georgia, but he's head of the mosque in Austin, Texas, and now he's speaking at this rally in Atlantic City. So interesting guy, and obviously you need a little bit of money to be able to do that. But what's interesting about him, he's going to give a talk this morning on the Islamic conquest of Jerusalem. He did a speech last night talking about how the Arabs conquered Jerusalem in the year 633, and this morning's lecture is going to be the great victory when the Muslims reconquered Jerusalem from the Crusaders under Saladin. So this is what they're teaching. So once they teach that we Muslims conquered Israel, you know, a thousand years ago, and under our doctrine, once a land is Muslim, it can never again be occupied by anybody else. In other words, they're actually preaching that Spain has to become Muslim again, that Greece has to be Muslim again because they used to be under Muslim control. So this is how radical they are. So, you know, what they preach is if somebody else is in your land, well, you have the right to get rid of them by any means necessary. And that's part of the doctrine. Now this is something else that's interesting. I have no idea what Jawad Rasool said to the crowd out in the park. You had the Atlantic City police were closely watching it. Of course, we have no idea what he said inside the mosque. But by coincidence, this same Jawad Rasool was a nationally known figure in 2012. And if you Google him, you'll see right away what happened. Because at that time, the New York Police Department was doing surveillance on various mosques and Islamic groups in New York. They did it after the World Trade Center attack because they found out that the people who did the World Trade Center attack were followers of this guy called the Blind Sheikh, who had a mosque in Brooklyn. And it was his followers who murdered Rabbi Kahane in Manhattan in 1990. And it was the followers of this guy who tried to blow up the World Trade Center in 1993 with a truck. They put a bomb in a truck they rented from Ryder. I don't know if you remember that. But after that happened, the New York Police Department would send undercover guys to see what was being taught in these mosques. And by the way, that is standard procedure in every single Islamic country, because even in Islamic countries, they want to know to make sure that some of these radical preachers are not using the mosque as a excuse to recruit terrorists. So what happened was when news of that surveillance came out, it was this Jawad Rasool who was interviewed all over the country saying how horrible it was. He was a student at the City College in New York, and how could you possibly do this to me? And by the way, at that same time when the news came out, Governor Chris Christie said he was shocked by that surveillance. He completely attacked the police chief of New York, and he said that this surveillance would not be tolerated in New Jersey. So now we have no idea what is being taught or preached in these mosques, which might be of some concern. So that's all posted our Liberty and Prosperity site.
It's really something. I just can't get over the support for these terrorists. I'm baffled by this, but that's
You're right. But if you look at the signs, they say Israel's a terrorist. You're living on stolen land. So what do you do if someone's stealing your land? You have the right to kill them to get them off your land, and that's how they justify it.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt that if some imam would tell these people, you go after somebody here in America for something, or go after Christ, they'd do it in a heartbeat because that's the doctrine that they're embracing. And this has been going on for 20 or 30 years. And meanwhile, while all this is going on, our clueless Jewish community leadership is saying, we got to watch out for those white supremacists. We got to watch out for the extreme right. And they don't say a single word about this. And that's why they got so strong. Just time for one more point that I didn't have a chance to post yet. I was about to talk about that incident in New York last week, where you had some homeless guy, obviously mentally ill, being treated for all sorts of violent behavior, but he's wandering the streets of New York, and he finally, just for no reason, grabs a 26-year-old guy, punches him, breaks his jaw, and then he takes a 30-year-old woman, shoves her head into the side of a departing subway train. She tumbles into the tracks, and she has critical brain damage. So I was about to post something about what are we doing wrong here? How can we have people who are obviously mentally ill, who, back until the 1960s, before we had that change in culture with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Jack Nicholson, we had Ancora. We had Byberry in Bayberry in Philadelphia. We had these institutions where dangerous people could be kept away from society to protect us. And suddenly when we changed the culture in the 1970s, 1980s, these people are out in the street. They're just as dangerous as they were as when they were confined. But the psychiatrists are telling, no, we're giving them mood-altering medication that calms them down. And if you look at, I'd say, 80 to 90% of the mass shootings and mass violence, you'll see it's almost all of them are tied to this mood-altering drugs where people have no idea of the consequences of what they're doing because they're not thinking clearly. But why do we think it's safer to put these people out in the street, giving them these drugs. And then, of course, the second thing tied to this, you couple that with the confidentiality laws, where the psychiatrists and the social workers and the supervisors know how dangerous these people are, but they're not allowed to tell the police, or they're not allowed to tell the schools, or they're not allowed to tell the neighbors about how dangerous these people are, because they could lose their careers for violating the confidentiality. So we're examining that. And of course, a third factor is this culture of envy and revenge. And we talk about this a lot at libertyandprosperity.com. Benjamin Franklin said that the whole idea of America and American opportunity is, if something is wrong in your life, you get an education, you get training, you discipline yourself, you work, you practice, you achieve, you succeed. That was always the American ideal. But when you get the socialist ideal, whatever breed of socialism it is, it's always your life is miserable, you don't have a chance, it's somebody else's fault, you get even and take what's yours. You couple those three things, we're not confining dangerous people, we're giving them medication that makes them crazier, and we have this culture that if there's unhappiness in their life, they should get even with somebody else. And that's what we have to do. And you could talk about guns all you want, but if you don't deal with these underlying causes, you're going to have people getting stabbed, getting shoved into subway tracks. We've got to deal with the underlying causes. So that's our message of libertyandprosperity.com for this week's breakfast. And, of course, we meet 9:30 to 10:30 at the at Sal's Cafe in Summers Point, and I'm on my way.
Okay. Okay, Seth. He actually ended on time. Amazing. Seth Grossman, Liberty and Prosperity. Website libertyandprosperity.com is the website. It's Talk with a Purpose, Saturdays 9 till noon, WPG Talk Radio 95.5. I'm John DeMasi.